Is predictable, they've seen it happen.
And one story that always kind of captures my imagination.
The streets lost culture.
And you're listening to Kerning Cultures.
I'm Dana Balut, and this is Kerning Cultures.
It's good that we did this today because Tuesday was kind of crazy.
Our story today starts with Hiba Aridi. She's a Lebanese-American woman in her 30s and grew up between Lebanon and New Jersey. And I wanted to talk to her because of something that happened to her when she was young. It might sound unusual to you, but we'll explain a little bit later. For now, I'm just going to let the tape run. Here's Hiba.
Okay, it started off when I was around 4 or 5. Every night when I'd go to sleep, I'd feel like someone's patting my hand and saying, "Nada, nada, nada." And that was my early memory of why do I keep having the same reoccurring feeling and I keep hearing the same name. And I would talk to my mom, I'd tell my mom, and she never really said anything until I got older. And, you know, my mom would call me and I'd say, "No, my name is Nada." And I was like 3 at the time or 4. And I'd say, "No, my name is Nada."
It wasn't just that Hiba was asking her mom to call her Nada. There were other things too. Like she'd sit next to a window of their home in Lebanon, pretending to make a sandwich for somebody named Amin. No one in her family was named Amin.
And my mom would say, "What are you doing?" And I'd say, "I'm waiting for Amin."
And when her mom would ask her who Amin was, she'd say, "He's my husband."
No, Amin.
She was 5.
I expected her to know who Amin was. I'd wait for him every
day. One day, her mom had a guest over the house, a woman from the village. And she overheard one of their conversations about this man named Amin.
My mom's like, "Yeah, she keeps saying her name is Nada and her husband's name is Amin." And the lady's like, "Oh, well, not too long ago, a couple years ago, there's a woman I know from our village and her name was Nada and her husband's name was Amin and she passed away."
Her mom brushed off the idea and she said she didn't want to entertain it. But her friend must have gone back and told other people in the village who told other people. Because shortly after that,
they just showed up at the house one day.
They got a knock on the door.
Unannounced.
It was Amin's family.
My mom said she opened the door, and as soon as she opened the door and I saw the woman standing at the door, I ran to her. And I was 3, 4, so I don't usually run to strangers like that. I ran to her, I hugged her. I was very comfortable with her. And they talked to me for a bit. I don't remember the details, but they talked to me for a bit and they asked my mom if it was okay. So my mom agreed. And when I got to the house, she said, "As soon as you got out the car, you ran around the whole house and you remembered everything. And you'd go into every room and say, you know, when khatiyara al kent adihon? Where's the old lady that used to live here? Or why isn't this table here the way it used to be? Or where's my jewelry that I used to put here?" And it kind of confirmed, everyone's like, "Yeah, this is where her grandmother used to stay, and this is where she'd put her jewelry, and this is where..." And, you know, as a 4-year-old, you can't make that up. That's not your imagination.
So hearing Hiba's story, to a lot of people, might sound, I don't know, maybe unusual is the wrong word, but it's not something you hear about every day.
This is producer Alex Atak, who helped me out on this story.
But to you, because you're from a similar background to Hiba, you're both Druze, which is a minority religion in Lebanon, and lots of Druze people believe in reincarnation. So hearing her story, it wasn't necessarily something unusual. It wasn't something that was completely out of the ordinary for you.
Not at all. Not at all. Like growing up in Lebanon, I grew up in Lebanon and I'm from a very small mountainous village, as most Druze villages. It's very common that you hear people talk about their past life. And there's a word for it, like when a child is born, they say not all, which is like she remembers her past life. Even kids will start speaking of their past life. It's very common, and sometimes it creates a lot of angst in people as well. Like I remember I had one friend that was so anxious and frustrated about the fact that in her past life, she was a very wealthy woman. And she would talk to me about how she can remember like gold bracelets going down her hands and her arms. And in her current life, she wasn't at all. She was struggling for money. And I remember her often talking about how that was frustrating. And I've had other friends remember on what hill they died and how they died. I mean, it's quite, it can be quite vivid.
There was no fear. Yeah, I was, looking forward, so to speak, for a new life. I was saying, well, if I'm going to die, I hope that I will be born again at a good home with a good mother that can take care of me.
And, I mean, how have you felt about it growing up?
I never gave reincarnation much thought growing up. I would say my family my parents do believe in it. I'm undecided. It's, in the Druze faith, you have to be reincarnated into another Druze soul. So your Druze soul gets reincarnated into another Druze soul. And that's mainly because, you can't convert into the religion. So there's a limited number of Druze souls. The story goes that there was a period in time in history where it's almost like the door was opened to convert into being a Druze. And then the door closed. And so all the souls that became Druze, like my soul, I guess, there's a limited number of them, so you get reincarnated into another Druze person.
Yeah, so it's kind of like it's sort of like a way of the community almost like replenishing itself in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And so is there an element of it to which it's like Druze is already a minority, it's already a very small community, and so like an element of the belief in reincarnation is this thing of like sort of wanting to keep the community alive?
Yeah. A big part of being Druze is keeping the community alive and your responsibility of keeping the community alive. Again, because you can't convert into the religion, you can only be born into it. And that's why there are things that like marrying outside the religion is a really, really big deal, because it's almost like you're messing with the gene pool almost. On a larger scale, you're contributing to the collapse of your faith by marrying outside the religion.
Yeah. It sounds, though, to me like it's something that can also be really, like, lead to all kinds of, like, really complicated and fraught emotional situations, right? It sounds like there's a million ways that reconnecting with your past life family can be just an impossible emotional situation to have to deal with.
Absolutely. I think sometimes, and in the case of Hiba's story, it's not always so positive.
I was 15. I was a sophomore in high school, and I was visiting Lebanon with my father one summer, and we were at his friend's house, and we're sitting on the balcony talking, and they start talking about reincarnation and how many different people from their villages that have been reincarnated, and they're sharing other people's stories. And so I told my dad, I'm like, oh, wasn't I reincarnated? And he said, yeah. And he told the guy, oh, you know who she was? And I'm like, oh, you know who that, where the people live? And he said, yeah. And I'm like, can we go visit? And I really didn't think about the whole process. I was young. I didn't think about the long-term effects. I was just curious. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Let me go see them.
So the next day, they went. Hiba, her dad, her aunts, and two of her cousins. They all got in the car and drove to this home. And when they knocked on the door, a woman answered.
When she saw my dad, she recognized him, so she knew it was me.
It was Hiba's past life sister.
And I felt very uncomfortable as soon as we got there. She sees my dad, and she automatically starts crying, and she looks at me and she says, Hiba, Hiba. And I said, yes. And I didn't know who she was. So she starts hugging me and kissing me, and it made me feel uncomfortable because I didn't know this person, but she was treating me like, we were best friends. And then they're like, call Sara, Aitula la Sara. And I had no clue who Sara was at the time. So I said, who's Sara? And they said, oh, that was your daughter.
Neda, Hiba's past life self, had a daughter named Sara, who was now roughly Hiba's age.
So this teenager, this door opens and this teenager walks out. She was a redhead, you know, curly red hair, freckles. And she looked angry. And she walked straight to me. And she looked at me with like an attitude. And she said, "Hala inti emmi?" Basically, or, oh, so you're supposed to be my mom. And I was like, oh no, no, I'm not. You know, mentally, I was like, no, I'm definitely not. And I kind of was, that's when it hit me. Like, what am I doing here? Why did I come here? You know, my curiosity is opening up a lot of pain for these people. And I didn't think that through. And we went back out on the balcony and my dad at the time was like, Hiba, why don't you and Sara go for a little walk? And I go for a walk with her. I remember we were on someone's roof and we were just walking on the roof back and forth. And she was a year older than me, but she was speaking to me like I was her mother. She wasn't speaking to me like I was Hiba. She was speaking to me like I was Neda. And she started automatically like, you don't know what they did to me after you left. And her dad remarried and, you know, her stepmom, I guess, wasn't the greatest to her. She treated her badly compared to the other siblings. And she said stuff like I left a sweater for you. And she even burned that and she wouldn't let me keep any memories of you. And I realized, you know, this girl had a really rough life in this village. And I'm gonna go back to New Jersey in a week and go back to high school and move on with my life. And why did I just do this? And it really hurt me because I couldn't do anything. Like, what was I supposed to do? You know, what was I supposed to do as a teenager? Like, how was I supposed to protect her from that or help her in any way? Or
when Sara was talking to you, or when, like, you know, your family from the past life would talk to you and interact with you, are you answering as Hiba or are you answering as Neda?
I think they always asked me, expecting it to come out as Neda, but it always came out as Hiba. I was not Neda. I didn't feel that motherly instincts towards her, so I always spoke as Hiba. And I think that caused more pain for them.
They stayed at the house for about 2 hours, but when they went home that evening, the whole thing still bothered Hiba. She couldn't shake it, that she hadn't felt any strong connection with Sara or anyone else in the family. Nothing about it felt familiar. She didn't sleep very well that night, and then a couple of days later, Neda's family showed up at her house again, asking Hiba if she would stay over at their place.
And I was like, oh no. So I ended up going because I didn't want to say no to Sara. I really felt bad for her. And I went up one, I think it was like a Friday, and I couldn't sleep all night. I sat with Sara and we talked about her life and the life she had, and it was completely different from mine, completely different. And the next morning was when it got really weird. We woke up that morning and she said, okay, well, we're gonna go to my dad's house.
Oh no.
And I didn't know if I wanted to be there anymore, like, let alone meet her dad.
So this is Amin?
Amin.
Okay.
Amin, Hiba's past life husband, the one she was making all those sandwiches for.
And we end up going to her dad's house, and I'm not exaggerating, I think half the village was there. There were probably, you'd think it's a wedding, there was probably like 100 people on the balcony, inside the living room. And I get there, mind you, I'm 15, 16, and everyone is just staring at me. And everyone would do salim. Everyone wants to say hi and greet, and they want to kiss, 3 kisses on the cheek. And then everyone just kept staring at me, and they'd say stuff like, "Min ahla, Hiba wala Neda?" Or, Hiba aqsar min Nada.
A quick translation here. They're saying things like, who is prettier, Hiba or Nada? Oh, Hiba's shorter than Nada.
Or, you know, I'm like, this is very weird. And then Amin came out and he was just crying. It was very weird because, you know, he was a man in his 60s and he just couldn't stop crying. And I didn't feel anything towards him at all. At all. I think I was, if anything, I just really wanted to get out of there. So I left and I had someone, I think it was her uncle or someone, take me back home.
Even if that whole situation in Lebanon had made her feel uncomfortable and she didn't believe that she truly was Nada in her past life, Hiba still felt some sort of connection with the family. Because when she came back to New Jersey, Hiba kept a photo of her past life daughter, Sara, in her bedroom, which is how her younger sister, also named Sara, found out about her. This is Sara, Hiba's sister.
I only discovered this because Hiba had a picture on her dresser. And like we shared the same bedroom for like, you know, the first, I don't know how many years of my life. And when I noticed it, that's when she told me that it was a picture of Sara. I was kind of like, just going with the flow. I was like, this is her story. I believe it. You know, there are so many people in our hometown in Lebanon and in general in Lebanon. You know, if you're talking to Druze people, everyone has this story of a relative or a friend or a friend of a friend who's reincarnated. And so I was like, okay, well, my sister's not quote unquote crazy. You know, she's not the only person in the world who has had these stories. You know, it's as if she told me that she like, I don't know, that she has like a secret talent. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't understand it, but I believe, you know? Yeah.
Sara is more skeptical about past life experiences and reincarnation than her sister. She's a journalist, and she says she likes to put her beliefs into things that she can touch, feel, and see. And that's partly why I wanted to speak to them together. As a Druze person myself, who hasn't fully decided how I feel about reincarnation, I wanted to hear what shaped their very different beliefs and how they landed where they did.
I would say for the first 10 years of my life, the Druze religion almost meant nothing to me. Not that I didn't like it or I didn't respect it. It was more like we knew that our parents were religious and they would talk about being Druze all the time. But, you know, we lived in New Jersey and there was no one in my life at the time that was asking about, you know, my religion at all. It wasn't a conversation that came up with my friends.
When she was 16, Sara's father passed away. And for her, that was a big turning point in her relationship with religion.
It was kind of like, you know, kind of just reaffirming like, okay, there's no point in praying. There's no point in, you know, assuming there's a higher God or a higher power that's going to look out for you because the world is totally random and totally arbitrary. And I don't think, you know, there's anything wrong with other people praying. It's just not the way I live and the way I see the world.
Hiba's relationship with the faith went the other way. While Sara was frustrated at how secretive the faith was, Hiba was fascinated and she dug deeper.
Every time I was in Lebanon, I'd visit those shrines or l'mehmet or whatever you want to call them, and I'd look for books written in English. And I'd find them in like al-Baruq or Little Diyab in Lebanon. But I found a couple. I found the Druze faith by Samim Kadim, and I found mysticism in the Druze faith and Druze and astrology. And these are very deep, deep books.
When researchers have studied past life experiences amongst the Druze communities in Lebanon, here's what they found. Some children who claim to have past life experiences are more prone to daydreaming or attention seeking. And some of the reports found evidence of PTSD-like symptoms, which might go some way to explaining why so many children who grew up during the Lebanese Civil War have stories of past life memories.
But Hiba's story about meeting her past life family was so vivid and so convincing, and so many of these stories are.
So I've seen it check out so often that I want to give more credit than a sense of imagination.
Natalie Laid is writing her PhD project on reincarnation. And in her research, she's found this hard to explain.
I mean, a child's capacity for imagination is almost unparalleled. And a lot of Druze people who do remember, remember as children, and they're remembering at a very young age. But we also have this verification process, right? So when certain families allow it, they will kind of explore or verify these children's stories. Sometimes they don't check out, and sometimes they do. And sometimes there's kind of these gaps in understanding where this could be right, but not everything is spot on, or it doesn't always fit. But there's also verified stories. So what do you do with that? And then whether or not it's true, what is the belief in that do? What is the impact of that? So if you truly believe it, or if the family that you're associated with truly believes that, what does that mean? That kind of shifts things for them, and it can be very life-changing.
This is something that a lot of research on reincarnation in Druze communities misses. Whether you believe it or not, Natalie told us that it does have a real role in keeping the community tied together.
And what I find most interesting about that for the Druze is we're very small. There's estimated to be about 1 million of us in the entire world. What reincarnation does for us in the sense of interconnectivity. So there are people that I've spoken to who will visit their past life families and then begin visiting their past life families over and over and over again. And they become part of their family in this present life. So it's a way that we remain connected to one another across time and space, despite our limited numbers. So yeah, when I'm hearing kind of testimonies and stories, the idea of whether it's true or not has never really mattered to me, because what matters to me is that the implications or the belief of this for this person, for this family, and for this community.
There seems to be sort of like quite common instances where people with past life stories, when they talk about them or when they meet their past life families, it can be very traumatic. And I wondered how, like, Druze that you've interviewed or yourself personally, like how you sort of reflect on or how you square this thing that's like a deeply held belief, but also something that can be very traumatic and like emotionally difficult. How are those two things like squared in your experience?
It's hard because there's so much pain and sadness and trauma in these stories. But at the same time, there is an immense hope. And I think that hope comes from the idea that when we die, we do not die. So it can be really hard to go through these memories. But for many people, to remember your past life, despite its pain and trauma, it seems to be exciting and happy and full of possibility. And again, that chance for connection to another place and space and family. So there's a bit of a seesaw here, but it kind of seems to balance itself out.
Now, as an adult, Hiba does believe in reincarnation, even if she doesn't think she was part of that particular family in Lebanon, her past life family. She's since been through past life regression therapy, which is a kind of therapy where patients undergo hypnosis to try and remember past lives. Practitioners say it can help resolve trauma. And recently, she had become a past life regression therapist herself.
After doing past life regression, after getting there, and when I started getting into past life regression, it wasn't until I started accessing other past lives of mine that I noticed the deep connection and the relationships that left strong imprints that I was able to say, you know, no, I really didn't feel much towards my mother in that past life because she didn't leave an imprint. And to me, I think maybe we didn't have that great of a relationship. But I've experienced through regression other past lives that were connected to this one in particular, and it just made more sense and it gave me more understanding and it created more healing. And those are the past lives to me that I just feel are more beneficial for my growth or for like me evolving at the current moment.
And Sara, have you done past life regression?
You know, I haven't. I just know from her experience with some of her clients that if they go into it and they're not really there and they're not present and they're not willing to go under and just follow her kind of questions and just sort of have faith in the process, it's not going to work. And frankly, I don't think that it would work on me because I just don't believe in it. You know, I don't think that it's possible for me to access a past life. I'm also just sort of, I don't know. I just don't have the curiosity, to be honest. You know, I'm more interested in learning about this world. I feel like I don't know enough about the world that I live in. The reason why I think atheism is beautiful is because it reminds people that, like, we're literally all just human beings and we're all going to be alive for, you know, a few years and we're going to die and that's it. Like, it, to be very, very crude and simplistic, you know, but yeah, who knows? Maybe I'll change my mind in a few months or in a few years. I don't know. And I know Hibba's right here. So whenever I want to do it, she'll happily do it for me.
At first, Sada wasn't sure about her sister's new profession, but for a while they moved in together in New York. And she started to see Hibba's fascination of past lives for what it is, a desire to understand the world and her place in it. We can all relate to that.
I don't know if this sounds weird to say this. I was, like, proud of her. In a weird way, like, mostly because, you know, I don't think I believe in it. I don't think I ever will believe in it, but she discovered this. She's passionate about it. She's interested in it. She could talk about it for days. She found people that relate to her, you know, and obviously she found a way to make more sense of her experience with reincarnation. So I actually was really happy that she sort of found her individualistic beliefs on her own and just gained happiness out of it, you know? But she was truly, like, wanting to learn more about the religion because she was curious. And if I want to get really cliche and philosophical, like, that's why I went into journalism, you know, because I'm really curious about a lot of things and I just want to know more and I want to answer questions, and logic is, like, the one thing that I believe in, you know? So for her, she was just trying to make sense of her world because she appreciated the religion, whereas I was always the kind of person that was like, okay, maybe I'll read a little bit about it just so I know about my own history, but I'm not really, like, you know, ever going to have a deep connection to it.
So this is where the story was going to end, and then something happened.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so the story, it's unlike me to have these kinds of moments, but, you know, the facts are the facts. So I interviewed Hibba and her sister. We talked for many hours about, like, reincarnation, about being a young Druze woman. And one of my questions was, if I wanted to learn more about reincarnation, where can I get more information? And then Hibba said,
I recommend Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss to anyone.
You know, you should read this book called Many Lives, Many Masters. So I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. I'll look it up. And then I think it was the next day or, like, a couple of days later, I'm going on my usual run in my neighborhood. And in my neighborhood, there are these things called, like, you know, public libraries, but they're, like, not like an actual public library, but they look like these birdhouses, and there's, like, books in them, and then you take one and you put one, and it's like a nice community neighborhoody thing. And I'm doing my usual run, and I shift my eyes to the birdhouse library thing, and I see a book in there, a single book, and it's Many Lives, Many Masters. And I got goosebumps all over my body. And the first person that I messaged was you, Alex.
Alex, sorry. That was an incomplete message. Okay, so you know how I did the reincarnation interview with
Eva and to Fado? Add to this.
But I took it. And then inside of it was this note. I'm going to send it to you now.
There was a note inside. It says, to you who finds this, I'm still not sure if I believe in past lives, but I will say that it was a very underlined, very interesting read, and I believe everything that they experienced. Enjoy and keep exploring.
Alex, is there a God? And are they trying to talk to me?
I honestly think in my scale of, like, spirituality and, like, belief in things that I can't really explain, I was definitely deep in the scientific spectrum, and I am still a very secular person, and religion doesn't really play a role in my life. But I would say that after this, you know, finding that book and even reading it, honestly, I guess I've like shifted a little bit to be like maybe 10 or 20% more open to the magic of the world. This episode was produced by me, Dana Balut, and Alex Atak. Fact-checking by Tamara Jabouri, with sound design and mixing by Paul Alouf. Our team also includes Nadine Shakir and Zena Duidar. A special thanks to Hiba and Sara Aridi and Natalie Laid for speaking to us on this episode. You can read Sara's essay about reincarnation in the New York Times. The article is called My Sister Remembers Her Past Life. Somehow, I Believe Her. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.